Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We've got a wonderful show coming up for you today. Jordan Cheriton from Status Quo News. He's going to be with me once again. We've got lots to talk about with him, including the seven Flint officials who are getting away, quite possibly, with murder. He's also going to tell us about the recent fires at multiple different Amazon facilities that have now resulted in the suspension of 50 workers at the Staten Island facility because they refuse to work in unsafe conditions. We'll also be talking about Donald Trump's lawyers who have now had to lawyer up because they could be facing possible obstruction of justice charges. And one of Donald Trump's favorite candidates, Doug Mastriano up in Pennsylvania, proudly proclaimed recently that he was going to ban pole dancing in elementary schools. We'll talk about whether or not that's actually even a thing that needs to be addressed. All that and more is coming up. And don't forget, you can get the full show each week by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. This week, charges against seven officials in the state of Michigan for the Flint water crisis and the resulting deaths were dropped. Absolutely a miscarriage of justice. And joining me to talk about this, as well as some other issues of the day, is Jordan Cheriton with Status Quo News. And Jordan, I just want to jump right into this because obviously you have been on the ground in Flint. I think you have done a phenomenal job, better than anybody else, covering Flint from top to bottom, from the start till this very moment, one of the few people that has stayed on this, maybe the only one. So you know better than anybody, I think, what the hell is going on there. And I just want to get your immediate reaction because I saw it on your YouTube channel. How do you feel about these seven officials getting off with this?
Well, first of all, this is an addition to the June ruling that removed charges against former Governor Rick Snyder and a few other officials. So overall, there's nine officials so far this year that have had charges dropped against them. It's infuriating. You know, I don't want to presume to, you know, be outraged more than a Flint resident, because obviously I wasn't poisoned. But as somebody who's been on the ground there many, many times and really dug into this story for several years, you have to question what kind of legal system we have in this country if a whole city is poisoned and through technicalities and judicial incompetence and other things, charges against officials that there is clear evidence of criminal wrongdoing get tossed. And at this point, 8.5 years later, I'm not sure if any of these officials will ever see a jury trial, much less be convicted and go to jail.
And any hope, really, I think, of you know, relaunching any of these investigations, there is for a lot of these alleged crimes, is about a 6-year statute of limitations. So with the dropping of most of these charges, that's the end of it, right? I mean, we can't come back later. We can't get a new attorney general up there in Michigan. And speaking of, you know, we've got this Democratic AG, Dana Nessel. And Dana is one of the people, a Democrat, again, going after these Republicans, who really helped lay the groundwork for all of these charges to be dropped. And you and I had talked about that maybe about a year ago, but I rehashed some of that just so everybody knows, like, we've got a bipartisan effort here to let these people off the hook. So tell us the Dana Nessel part of this.
Yeah, I'll try to give the cliff notes because it's long and convoluted. Basically, in 2016 was the launch of the original Flint criminal investigation. There was a special prosecutor appointed, so kind of like a Robert Mueller, to oversee the Flint case. That was launched by a Republican attorney general before Nessel. And through all my reporting, that was a pretty solid investigation. In 3 years, they had charged 15 officials between the state of Michigan and city of Flint. By my reporting, they were actually building a case against Governor Snyder for involuntary manslaughter. So they were going after the governor. And this, again, was a special prosecutor and a 3-year investigation. They had built a racketeering case, which is, you know, RICO, which is commonly used against, you know, mafia and like really big financial crimes. But when Attorney General Nessel won election and assumed the Attorney General's office in 2019, she decided I'm in a clean house, and she just fired the whole team, the special prosecutor, the chief investigator, and claimed that they had messed up and they hadn't sought all the evidence and all these things. And she started from scratch, appointing new prosecutors and investigators. And her decision since then really didn't make a lot of sense. Okay, you want to get rid of the special prosecutor and put in your whole, your own team? Okay, but why remove everybody? That's 3 years of investigation. They obviously know everything because they were building the cases for 3 years. She dropped charges a couple months after that, and then a year and a half later, recharged a lot of those same officials in some cases with lesser crimes. And this year, because Rick Snyder and a lot of these defendants have the best lawyers money can buy, they're wealthy, they contested that the Attorney General, Dana Nessel, that the way they prosecuted the cases was unconstitutional because Dana Nessel used something called a one-man grand jury, which in English just means a judge. So Snyder and other defendants said that was unconstitutional, and you can't indict, you can't issue indictments through a one-man grand jury. And in June, the Supreme Court of Michigan, bipartisan, it wasn't a partisan ruling, Democratic judges, conservative judges ruled in Snyder's favor that they had gone about this the wrong way, that they used the wrong process, which was a one-man grand jury, and threw him out. And that's why these charges yesterday were thrown out on that same Supreme Court ruling. So the irony is this Democratic attorney general who loves to go on MSNBC and she's beloved by the resistance, she fired a whole team claiming they were incompetent. Yet her decisions have led to all of these criminal charges being tossed.
And it's also important to point out this, the whole one man grand jury thing that they're talking about here. That's not uncommon. OK, what the attorney general did with the one man grand jury, that actually happens quite frequently, right? It's not the most common thing, but it's not unheard of, especially in cases like this. So for this court, you know, the Supreme Court up in Michigan to say, no, you cannot do that, they ostensibly would have to go back through all other prosecutions where this happened and toss those charges. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you can feel it. I mean, you can feel up there in that state of Michigan, everybody coming together to protect these people who let people die, not just the poisoning that we will be dealing with for generations, but people died. I mean, legionnaires killed people, and we were going to throw people in prison. We were very close to getting those manslaughter charges and negligence charges, and it's all gone. I mean, almost all of it, I think, at this point is gone, right, except a couple misdemeanor charges against Snyder.
Yeah. And there's another element, not to get too legalese, but Nessel and her team did not use a taint team, which basically part of what this special master is supposed to be doing is going through documents that prosecutors plan on using in a criminal investigation and making sure none of the documents are protected by attorney-client privilege. Nessel's prosecutors didn't do that. So that was another part of the reason that the charges were dropped. Nessel and her team are saying, well, that would take 2 years and it would. Well, yeah, but that's what you have to do legally. And they didn't do it. So it's, you know, some people think it was intentional. They intentionally messed up because they didn't want to really, you know, go all the way and go for Snyder, go after the money because there was financial fraud underneath this. Others think it was just gross incompetence. But either way, the bottom line is this is 8.5 years later in terms of the prosecution, 2016. So you're talking 5-6 years after this criminal investigation started. If she would have just let it continue to proceed, maybe, you know, she could have replaced the special prosecutor, but not the whole team. You probably would have seen at this point jury trials and at least some convictions. And, you know, the main Flint residents are now victimized again, you know, poisoned. The media has stopped covering this, but Flint now has one of the largest cancer clusters in America. They didn't get it from the weather. It's because of the water, which has caused cancers, kidney problems, liver problems, autoimmune, permanent brain damage in children, learning disabilities. Crime is up which research shows, you know, lead poisoning will result in more crime. So it's a slow rolling, you know, in many ways, it's kind of a slow moving funeral procession. I just did a round table interview last summer with about 10 residents. Three of them are gone in less than a year from various ailments. And most of these residents, you know, normal things before the water switch, no major health problems. So, you know, it's really upsetting, because imagine, you know, you have kids. If somebody hurt your kids, you want accountability. But now there's 8.5 years later. I mean, you mentioned the statute of limitations, other things, memories fade. So even if they were able to, you know, rejigger these prosecutions, how reliable is witness testimony at this point? So it's really a bad situation. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but the residents I've spoken with over the last 24 hours are really pissed off, to say the least.
And obviously they have every right to be. I mean, their lives have been upended by this through decisions made by outside of their control. You know, these people did nothing wrong. They went about their daily lives. The people in power, the people that they put their trust in to make the best decisions for them, knowingly did this. And unfortunately, this is kind of what we see in most of these, you know, corporate abuse cases. When a big corporation comes in and they're dumping their toxins and they're giving cancer to entire cities. Okay, we'll go to trial, then we pay you $500 million, and that's the end of it. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody actually gets in trouble. Nobody gets fired for any of these decisions. You just pay the money and you move on. You know, we've seen it with DuPont, with Monsanto, with Dow, with all of these major companies, with all the pharmaceutical companies. We see this every single year. And it's different, right, when it's corporations, right? Okay, we're used to corporations not sending people to jail. We're treading into new territory here where politicians, left, right, doesn't matter. Nothing matters. You can do whatever the hell you want. You pay off the victims at the end. You go about your day. That's the country we live in today.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, I'm actually working on a book right now on all this, but a lot of people don't realize that Wall Street was involved in this. There was bonds that were issued before the water switch for a completely new water system called the Karagandhi Water Authority. That's why Flint was even using the Flint River in the first place, because they were going to be joining a new water pipeline that, frankly, was completely unnecessary. And J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo issued the bonds. They've never faced any criminal penalty. They've been sued civilly on behalf of 2,500 Flint children, but the banks, no problem. They're going to get away with it. The investors that were in on this scheme, because there was charges against several state of Michigan officials and Flint officials for an allegedly fraudulent bond scheme to even allow Flint to borrow money to join this water system. So it all around, between the state of Michigan officials, the city of Flint officials, frankly, the media, if there were, you know, journalistic crimes, the media has abandoned this. I mean, we've spoken before. It's kind of backwards. It should be the hardest part for a journalist is breaking a major story, you know, building sources and getting it out there, not then having the rest of the media care. But it's the reverse. I mean, it's plenty hard for me to break stories on Flint, but much harder has been to get the media to even give a damn. You know, I pitch media outlets all the time with new information I have, including, you know, some bombshell information that I'm working on right now. I either don't get a response or they tell me, yeah, we don't think the reader interest is there. An American city poisoned. 8.5 years later, we haven't even mentioned the water's still contaminated. It is very disheartening. And, you know, I just feel for the people of Flint, because I promise you, if this were Ann Arbor, which is a, you know, wealthier white area of Michigan, or any other area that's not 53% black, 40-something percent impoverished, there'd be some justice, and they certainly would have clean water this far out.
And, you know, you bring up the media, and I think that's a wonderful point to talk about too here, because kind of like with the issue of climate change, they know it's happening. They don't want to talk about it because it's not a very sexy story, right? We can't talk about these things. We got to talk about, oh, Trump just said something crazy on Truth Social, so let's run a breaking news headline to talk about this nonsensical, stupid thing, because we know that's going to get the clicks, that's going to get the eyeballs, that's going to get our advertisers all revved up. But real stories, you know, stories like what you cover, they're like, we don't care. Yeah, these people have cancer. Yeah, they're dying. Yeah, there's neurological problems. But, ugh, we can't sell that in a 30-second soundbite, so we're going to move on. And we're going to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene's latest stupidity at this rally. And listen, I talk about those things as well. But at least we also do take the time to cover real news. We cover corporate abuses. We talk about things that the rest of the corporate media clearly has no interest in, because it's always a horse race, whether it's electoral politics or just even news of the day. They got to be the first one out with it. It's got to be stupid enough that people can understand it. And so big news, real news, just goes overlooked because they don't want to spend the time to think about things.
You know, last year I spoke with an NBC News editor. I had evidence that the top officials to Governor Snyder, right before the launch of the Flynn criminal investigation, wiped their phones, erased their phones, erased all their messages right before the launch of the criminal investigation. And I had other evidence that Snyder himself was basically evading prosecutors, kind of like Trump, like withheld all these classified documents. Snyder was withholding key briefings that probably alerted him that Flint's water was toxic at a time that he said he knew nothing about it. I delivered it all to this NBC News editor. She says to me, you know, I spoke with my higher ups and they think you have something really great here, but for the time and resources that would have to be put in, you know, fact checking, legal, they don't think, you know, there would be enough of a payoff, so to speak. So I said, so let me get it straight. If I brought to you that President Trump and his chief of staff, members of the CDC, EPA, whatever, that their phones were erased for the time period, January, February, March of 2020, and all their messages were gone pertaining to the coronavirus, you tell me you don't have the resources for that? Because it's the same exact thing. Obviously, COVID was global. I'm not comparing the two, but you're talking about destroying evidence and who knew what when. You're telling me you don't have the research? And the editor said to me, I'm with you, but I'm just literally said, I'm with you, but I'm working for the machine. And I like this editor. She was, you know, there wasn't much she could do. She said, working for the machine. So literally, because they don't think it would be profitable, I guess, didn't want to publish a story where I already had the goods. So that's what we're dealing with. I mean, The Intercept has published a couple of my Flint stories. The Guardian published one, Vice. But by and large, there's pretty much a blackout. And that's including on the ground in Michigan. The Flint Journal, frankly, is a propaganda arm for the state of Michigan. The Detroit Free Press, the Detroit News has turned down ironclad reporting that was based on documents from criminal investigation, high-level sources. So you really have to wonder, why is that? Is it because they don't care? Is it because for some reason there's a conflict with their advertisers? You know, I have my opinions, but at the end of the day, when mainstream media that has a much, much bigger outlet and platform than Status Quo, follow us on YouTube, when they cover things up, basically – That helps normalize it, like it's over, the problem's fixed. When they don't report on it, it sets in and normalizes, oh, the water's fixed, and oh, I don't hear about it anymore, so no problem. And that's a big problem. We're seeing it with COVID now, that they're basically making it seem like this is over. So, it's really – I'm going to keep going and keep digging, because I think this is the biggest government cover-up of the 21st century. Frankly, Watergate, if it didn't involve a president, would have nothing on this. You have multiple – the governor's office – environmental department, health department, banks involved. It's multiple levels of a cover up, and people died.
It's absolutely sickening. And of course, sickening that nobody's actually being held accountable for this. But I want to move on to another story here. And this is something I know you've been following. We've got Amazon workers up in Staten Island, the first unionized store, 50 of them this week, suspended by Amazon because they refused to work after there was a fire in the facility. They did not trust the working conditions. One worker ended up in the hospital from this fire. The rest of the employees at the warehouse, you know, they were having trouble breathing because of the smoke at the room. And then when Amazon says, get back in there, get to work, 50 said, no, absolutely not. This is not a safe environment. So they suspend them all. I mean, look, it's par for the course, I guess, with Amazon, because this is the kind of behavior we expect from them at this point.
Yeah, there's another element, too. The compactor that lit on fire, which, you know, breaks down cardboard boxes. There had been smoke coming from it a month prior, and Amazon didn't replace it. So they already knew there was, you know, problems with this compactor, and it lit on fire. And like you said, workers didn't want to go back to work. There was still, you could still smell smoke from several of them I spoke with in the warehouse hours after this fire. But Amazon said, well, the fire department cleared it. You know, it's a safe work environment. Well, I don't know. I don't want to inhale smoke as I'm doing, you know, serving as a robot for Amazon. And obviously sending them home with, you know, paid time off for the day would have done very little to affect Amazon's profits, but they don't want to give an inch on anything and do the humane thing, which is send the workers home, you know, do what you need to do to get rid of the fumes. So they, you know, about 100 workers did a bit of a sit down strike for an hour or two before going back to work, and 50 have been suspended. It's, by the way, I spoke with the lawyer for Amazon labor union. It's blatantly illegal and against their, you know, labor rights. They have a right to strike. They have a right, you know, working safe working conditions, not to go back to work. So you will probably see more complaints filed with the National Labor Relations Board. But the truth is, there's only so much the NLRB can do. It's not a criminal body, you know. So Amazon, Starbucks, you know, they get away with union busting, and in this case, just straight out jeopardizing the health of their workers, because, you know, nobody's going to go to jail for it. At worst, you get hit with a heavy fine, but it's outrageous. And, you know, honestly, the rest of society is numb to it. You know, people want to watch their Thursday night football, so they get Amazon Prime. People want their yoga mats in 3 hours delivered, whatever it is. So they don't. It's like out of sight, out of mind. You have a lot of media outlets that are have Amazon as a sponsor, you know, political playbook brought to you by Amazon. But it's insane that the second wealthiest corporation in America literally cannot, you know, eat a couple hours in terms of productivity while there's a fire. And by the way, you know, what other equipment in this warehouse is not up to snuff if they ignored this compactor that had smoke coming out of it a month prior?
And those workers had a good reason to fear that Amazon wasn't being forthright about how safe the conditions were, because down in Alabama, you had one sorting facility, I guess it was, one Amazon warehouse that had two fires in 2 weeks. So We're now starting to see a bit of a pattern. Amazon not addressing problems, Amazon letting bad things happen, and then, of course, Amazon saying, get your ass back in there and work. You know, yeah, you may catch on fire, but it's a big warehouse. You could probably get away from it, I guess, in time. So, you know, these workers do have a reason to fear for their safety. I mean, almost fear for their lives in these Amazon warehouses, because this is not a one-off event. This is something that is now starting to, again, become a bit of a pattern here.
Yeah, I mean, it's beyond a pattern, and it's not just the life or death. It's just the basic day to day. I mean, Amazon warehouses around the country apparently can't figure out air conditioning for their employees during the hot weather and summer. You have workers in Staten Island, even Seattle, that were passing out over the summer. I mean, there's a lot of equipment that is outdated, and people have had injuries. Amazon, from workers I've talked to, try to skirt and escape responsibility in terms of paying out disability and things like that for workers injured. So it is a very, very greedy operation, shall we say. And, you know, obviously Amazon has all the resources in the world to have the most up-to-date, you know, world-renowned facilities in the country, in the world, if they wanted to. They also have money to pay their workers a living wage, because contrary to what they're saying, a lot of Amazon workers work another job because they can't live off their wages. But it just goes to show you why it's so important to have a union, because even in this Staten Island location, which had the fire this week, is the first unionized Amazon, even though they're still not recognizing it. Even with this, Amazon is trying to punish the workers, even though they're unionized. So imagine what they're going to do elsewhere. So the fight continues. Right now, there's an election coming up in next weekend in Albany, which if they win, they would be the second unionized Amazon.
You know, you brought up a point, too, because everybody wants Amazon Prime, whether you want it for the football games, you want it for the videos, you want it for the, you know, express shipping. But there's another part of that, too. And I talked about this many, many years ago with regard to Walmart. We know how horrible Walmart is with the abuse of workers, the low wages, you know, getting all these tax subsidies and ultimately sucking money out of communities. But the other part of it, and Amazon, I think, is just as guilty of this, is it creates so much poverty, you know, people making these subpar wages that then you have no choice but to go and shop on Amazon because everything's cheaper there. You have no choice but to go to your Walmart because that's the only place you can afford. And it creates this cycle, this endless cycle where we know that these places are horrible. We know what they're doing is terrible, but we're so broke as workers. This is the only option we have. And in lots of places in the country, you know, I'll take my small town for an example. If I want an HDMI cable, I have to go to Walmart. If I want any, you know, any piece of electronic, I have to go to Walmart or Best Buy or Amazon. There is no local stores anywhere where I could buy this equipment. And if there was, it would probably be twice as expensive. So it's a horrendous cycle that we are stuck in. But that's what these big box places, which is exactly what Amazon is, that's what they've created for America. They pay you such crap that you can't afford to shop anywhere but the crappy place, which puts them in a position where they can just bring in more crappy people, make more crappy stores, and suck the life out of communities one by one.
Yeah, it actually works the opposite way, too, for employees, because a lot of these places, think Bessemer, Alabama, that tried to unionize. There's no real other job opportunities there. Amazon's the only game in town. So workers, you know, sure. Yeah, people could say, well, if you feel like you're being taken advantage of, go work somewhere else. Not a lot of other options in Bessemer. Same thing in a lot of places around the country. Look how major cities fought like hell, basically prostituting themselves to get Amazon open up like white collar offices because it would, you know, bring jobs. So because of the economic machete taken to a lot of parts of the country around the last 30 years where, you know, industry has receded, a lot of communities that might have been steel towns or, you know, auto towns. Amazon's one of the biggest employers. And if workers are going to try to get jobs elsewhere, it's going to be 2 to 3 jobs, or it's going to be a freelance job while also Ubering. So Amazon gives them at least full-time work. So again, Amazon has all the leverage. They could treat their workers however they want. They could send them back after a fire because there's not a lot of other options for employees. So it is a vicious cycle, both on the consumer end, like you pointed out, and on, you know, people working at Amazon.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, the politicians, you know, the cities, the states bending over backwards to give these companies everything that they want. And they do. They start these bidding wars. I know it was most recently, obviously, you know, the New York facility where they said, oh, well, what are you going to give us now? What are you going to give us? That was the first time I think the general public actually started paying attention to that. But there was a book, many years ago, probably 12, 13 years ago, it's called The Great American Job Scam. And it exactly spelled out how this was, you know, before Amazon was as big as it is, how Walmart would do that. Walmart would come into an area like a tri-city area and say, okay, I got 3 cities here. I want to build a big box store. Who's going to give me the best deal? How many tax breaks are you going to give me? How many tax breaks are you going to get me? Okay, they're going to give me this. How can you top that? And that's how they decide where to open the stores or which communities to avoid entirely. So politicians at the local level are doing everything they can at the state level, bending over backwards. And most people don't even realize that this is happening on a daily basis here throughout the country. And if they don't realize it, they definitely become the victims of it themselves.
Absolutely. And adding on to that, companies like Amazon, Walmart, too, they're not only getting the tax goodies and subsidies, so they're getting plenty of savings there. They're also basically getting corporate welfare, because the Walmart workers, Amazon workers, a lot of them are on welfare because they're not making enough money to live, pay their bills, et cetera. So Amazon, by not paying workers a living wage, they go on welfare. So Amazon is basically getting the benefit there, in addition to, you know, tax cuts, subsidies, tax abatement, deregulation in certain aspects. So it really is just a giant, giant boondoggle. Not to mention Jeff Bezos is getting, you know, $10 billion contracts from the CIA, from NASA to do, you know, do his vanity space missions. It's obscene. And, you know, to me, the only way, not just with Amazon, but in general, the only way that I think the people could fight back is economically. You see, sometimes you'll see like, oh, first of the month, boycott Amazon. You're going to need to do a lot more than a 1 day strike of Amazon. And that's hard because, like you said, it, you know, in theory, sure, you know, consumer boycott of Amazon. But a lot of people, that's the only thing they could afford. And if you got to get yourself your kid's stuff or whatever it is, maybe you're not going to do that. And you can't be so, you know, moralistic about it. So I think nothing's going to change as far as Amazon, these other kind of monopolies, without people, you know, protesting with their wallets, and also obviously antitrust laws and monopolization.
Yeah. And, you know, if we can keep this union push going, you know, it's been phenomenal what we've seen these last couple of years here. Let's hope that continues. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. You know, that's the one uplifting thing. If there's anything uplifting in America today, it's the fact that more and more workers, and I think a lot of it has to do with COVID, people want better. People want better conditions. People want better pay. Everybody, I think, kind of had that COVID awakening of, oh my God, here's a thing that could easily kill us. And it's killed more than a million people. What am I doing? What am I doing with my life? Do I really want to slave away for this garbage that they're giving me every 2 weeks in a paycheck? No, I want better. We all looked death in the eyes, basically, during the height of the pandemic, which, as you've said, is not gone by any stretch. People don't want to spend their lives toiling away for crap, only to die of a disease that we should have had under control 2 years ago. And I think that has a big part of the push. It's not 100% of it, but I think that's a big part of what we see happening with workers today, too.
Absolutely. And you want to know something? At the end of the day, we also have to call out the Democratic Party. You could talk about a 50-50 Senate till you're blue in the face. Yeah. Biden kind of, you know, in passing mentioned the PRO Act. They didn't fight for the PRO Act, and the PRO Act would actually add teeth to actually kind of make it harder for companies like Amazon to do this kind of stuff. Starbucks to make it easier to unionize, actually, you know, strengthen the National Labor Relations Board. So essentially, you know, Biden has said nice things, you know, Amazon, we're coming for you. But the Democratic Party in practice has done nothing to really, you know, make it harder for companies like this to union bust and exploit and put their workers at risk. So sure, Republicans are worse, but let's say the Democrats keep the Senate, keep the House. Do we have lofty expectations that they're going to be, you know, fighting to strengthen this union movement? No, their donors are very anti-union donors, period. Republican donors and Democratic donors. They don't want vibrant unions. So, you know, politicians are part of the problem here. And that's why I think the Amazon labor union said, and the Starbucks workers said, we're not going to really wait for politicians because they've let us down all this time. We're going to just do it from the ground up, workers trying to unionize. So I agree with you that that's where it's at. Also, in addition to the unions, union movements, you have 10-inch unions popping up now throughout the country to fight a sea of evictions, in many cases wrongful evictions. So there is things happening and worker power and people power. But yeah, I really hope that something is done before, you know, there's a bigger fire and you're going to have, you know, people losing their lives.
Yeah. I mean, another, you know, triangle shirtwaist factory situation happening here. Now, listen, Jordan Cheriton, nobody covers these issues better than you. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, Status Coup on YouTube. That's Status COUP. We're on YouTube. You might not see us because YouTube likes to hide us. But we are live every day, 5 o'clock Eastern time, statuscoup.com. And if you want to support our on the ground journalism, we are on the ground often in Flint, covering, union efforts like Amazon. We are at statuscoup.com/join.
Jordan Cheriton, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Farron.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's show. But remember, if you sign up and become a member, you get the full show every single week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archive. Go sign up at rofpodcast.com.